TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. How to Curb the Global Financial Casino. Tax the rich to feed the poor. Currency speculators trade over $1.8 trillion every day across borders. 85% of that investment is speculative and has already triggered national currency collapses and financial crises. This kind of buying and selling of national currencies across borders is called the modern-day global financial casino. Computer trading makes it even easier for speculators to bet on the rise and fall of currencies. More than 40% of these transactions involve so-called round trips of fewer than 3 days. That means in less than 3 days, the currency is sold again and again. Over 80% of global foreign exchange transactions involve round trips of less than a week. In a feedback loop, these speculative transactions themselves often cause short-term fluctuations of exchange rates, thus provoking more speculation. There is overwhelming evidence that the lack of stability in currency markets helped to trigger the financial crisis in Europe 1992-93, Mexico in 1994, Southeast Asia in 1997, Russia 1998, and 1999 in Brazil. Imagine what this means for the people in an affected country. All of a sudden, the wages they earn are devalued while prices go up. People lose their jobs. Social and economic projects collapse. It is said that the Asian financial crisis caused the unemployment of 10 million people, not just in Asia, but across the world. Currency trading on such scale and with global consequences is a fairly recent phenomenon. Daily trading in currency markets increased from $0.2 trillion to over $1.8 trillion in just over a decade, from 1986 to 1998. The solution to the problem and the political will to apply them are only now emerging. What is now being discussed is a currency transaction tax, often called the Tobin tax, that puts a very small tax on each transaction. The small amount will not unduly burden those who buy and sell currency for legitimate investment reasons, but will penalize those who buy and sell multiple times within a few days for speculative reasons. A little over a year ago, I had the pleasure to meet Ruth Ann Cecil from the Arcata, Northern California-based Tobin Tax Initiative. Ruth Ann Cecil is the Program Director for Financing and Sustainable Development. She has a PhD in law from the University of California, Hastings. I recorded her in August of 1999, at a small conference on sustainable futures. She was asked to give a basic introduction to Tobin taxes. She begins with a mini lecture on numbers and scale. Ruth Ann Cecil.
The metaphor I was thinking of was a casino in a home. And the house has the casino in the upstairs, and people are gambling there with incredible quantities of money. And then there's a sort of a service class of people who are running up the stairs and helping support this casino, which is doing the gambling at the top of the house. And as you move through the layers of the house, there's incredible wealth at the top. And as you move, there ends up to be a basement, which is, of course, the entire support network of poor people who have become the structural basis for such a casino to go on acting. And then there's a sub-basement of people who aren't in the economy at all. Now, I'm going to divide this talk into three parts. And the first part, very briefly, I will talk numbers. And so for those who don't like to hear numbers, it's going to be very brief. And you'll find it interesting because I want to take you through some thinking about numbers in a slightly different way. In the second part, I'll describe the international movement that is already occurring on the Tobin tax. It's less so in the United States than in many other parts of the world. It's very exciting in a number of other countries. There are 10,000 activists in France right now who are working specifically on this issue. And then the third part of the talk will be three crises and three opportunities. Numbers. We can all think of a million, and generally we know what a million is. It represents a certain number of jobs in this country. If you wanted to create a million-dollar project and you knew that the people that you wanted to work on the project, each of them wanted to make $30,000 a year, then for every three people, that's approximately $100,000 with fringe benefits. So 30 people would be a million-dollar project. That's one way of looking at it. Certainly there are many other things that we can think of that represent a million. For instance, 6 million people dying in World War II, in the Holocaust, in Germany and the occupied territories, and another 15 million people in the Soviet Union who died. Another million figure is that 10 million people will die in sub-Saharan Africa in the next 10 years of AIDS. Those are millions. Now, billions are a little bit harder to think about. $1 billion will buy you Pacific Lumber's land and forests. Costs about that much to buy back a small portion of that for the federal and state government when they decided to buy Head Waters Forest. That's $1 billion. A couple of billion a year will support the internal workings of the United Nations. $65 billion a year will buy you the California budget, and takes over $1,000 billion, which is $1 trillion, to buy you an annual federal budget. I think at about $1.7 trillion right now. So another billion figure that puts you in the human realm a little bit is 6 billion people in the world, and projected growth in the next 20 years to about 15 billion. Some projections that were run out in the early 1970s by the Club of Rome in a study called Limits to Growth suggested that by the year 2050, we'll be running between 40 and 50 billion people in the world. But they interestingly create a rise in the graph up to 50 billion, and then a very rapid drop to about 40 billion. Now, when I saw that chart, I got really frightened because what I saw was a Holocaust of 10 billion in that rapid drop around 2050. So that's a scenario that represents something of much greater magnitude than the Holocaust we've experienced in the past, therefore means a model that we cannot project into the future. We cannot allow ourselves to get into a situation where that occurs in the next 50 years. Therefore, we need to act very quickly to reverse that. So the business of creating alternative future is a life-saving business, and I think we're all in agreement on that. So those are some billion figures. Now, trillion is 1,000 billion, and as I mentioned, the federal budget is 1.7 trillion annually. The casino at the top of this global economy house is the foreign currency exchange, which is where you go to this casino club, only it's a legal club. It's called the Forex, or the foreign currency exchange. And you can trade dollars for yen and yen for pesos and trade back and forth. It operates at $1.7 trillion per day. That means that every day of the year that is in operation, $1.7 trillion daily, 365 trillion annually. Now, that is money sloshing around the planet. Those trades are basically unregulated and untaxed, and I think for many of us, the interest in a very small transaction tax on those is an interest in what could be the potential revenue from that, which we could be anywhere between 100 and 300 billion annually is being projected. This is a lot of figures, but I hope you see clearly the difference between millions, billions, and trillions, and what is potentially here in terms of revenue. And then, of course, a big question that could be asked is what could be done with such revenue. Well, one model is the continuing model of the military-industrial complex, an incredible increase in military spending, which is currently at $800 billion annually around the world. That's not a model that I think most of us would prefer, so again, we need to be thinking in terms of creating alternative futures here. So I think that's enough numbers. I want to move into, just briefly, the second part of this talk, which is the international movement for the Tobin tax. And I haven't yet explained to you what the Tobin tax is, and that's on purpose.
Spell it, please.
T-O-B-I-N-T-A-X. Named after James Tobin, who's an economist at Yale, a Nobel laureate in economics. He got his Nobel not for this idea, but for portfolio theory. This is a highly respected Keynesian economist, now in his 80s. So anyway, that's why it's called the Tobin tax. The international movement at this point in time is, in France, there are 10,000 activists. They have a group called ATTAC, A-T-T-A-C, and it stands for Action Transaction Tax to Aid Citizens, same in French as in English. And the movement in the rest of Europe is smaller, but there's a healthy grassroots movement in each country. There is the Canadian Parliament, the members of the Canadian House, have already passed a resolution. It's an advisory resolution, but it's asking the Canadian government to seriously consider the Tobin tax and to show leadership around the world in international adoption of the Tobin tax. So, and then there are movements in Brazil. There's an interest in a number of NGOs that are working on development and environment throughout Africa. And there's quite an interest in Asia. That's briefly the second part of this talk, which is just to give you a flavor for this, because there is not yet that much of a movement in the U.S. The third part of the talk, just briefly, three crises and three opportunities. The reason that many people are interested in this approach is because of the global financial crisis. In Asia, in 1997, the currency dropped in a number of countries. The value of currency dropped in a number of countries. In Mexico in 1994, the value of the currency dropped. Now, this is a very difficult concept for people in the U.S. to grapple with, because we do not do an awful lot of trading between currencies. For those of you who've traveled in Europe and have had to, every time you cross a border, change your dollars for francs and your francs for marks and your marks for Swedish crowns and so forth as you move around through the countries, you begin to understand the importance of the value of currency. But at any rate, in a country that is based on trade, import and export, and is very closely tied into the international economy, the shift in value of money, the rapid shift in value of money, can be devastating. So the financial crisis in Southeast Asia was largely the result of rapid transactions in currency, the creation of a large speculative bubble, because this market is so huge now, and then as speculators pulled out rapidly and the currency dropped, a form of economic chaos occurred in each country. Now, that varies from country to country. The way it plays out depends on a lot of factors, but basically changes in price structure. So what James Tobin did was to come up with an idea in the early 1970s, actually before the problem started. He came up with the idea of a small transaction tax on these currency exchanges. Now, when he came up with the idea, it was shortly after Richard Nixon had taken us off the gold standard. The dollar used to be backed by gold. He took us off the standard in the early 70s, and at that point, the currency market began to grow just a little bit, and it has continued to grow, so now it's a logarithmic growth. But at any rate, when Tobin came up with the idea, his reasons for it were basically to slow the market down and to restore national sovereignty. And the third reason, he projected it, but at that point it was a very small market, a certain amount of revenue would be possible for public goods. Now, the logarithmic growth of the size of that market to what it is now has made those three points that James Tobin came up with the idea so much more important. And let me describe these basically. First of all, taming the market. If you put a tax on one transaction and you are trading $1 billion on the currency exchange, and you only trade it once a month, that tax on a volume tax, a sales tax, will be a penalty, but it won't be much of a penalty. However, if you are exchanging that same $1 billion daily, many, many times over, that will begin to represent so much that you will likely make fewer currency trades. So his idea was that it would penalize those short-term traders who were trading over and over and over again. Now, what that would do is it would shrink the size of the market. Instead of it being 1.7 trillion per day, it might go down to 200 or 300 billion, or maybe even smaller. That would be a good thing because as the market shrinks, that would allow the central banks of the various countries a chance to restore their national sovereignty over their own money. What has happened now is that the speculators are in control of what happens to the money on a daily basis by rushing in and speculating on a particular country and then pulling out rapidly. It's they who decide what the money is worth. So central banks used to be able to buy a billion of their own currency or something like that and keep it up in value. They can no longer do that, but if this tax were in effect and the market were smaller, then those central banks would be able to do that again. So taming the market would be an aspect of that and restoring of the national sovereignty. The third thing that would do is create revenue, and that revenue would be available for social and environmental goods. And this brings us back to some of those early numbers that we talked about. $2 billion per year will give the people of sub-Saharan Africa the drugs that are now available in the U.S. to keep HIV-positive people from turning into AIDS victims. $2 billion a year in this scenario where $1 trillion is changing hands daily is such a pittance that it's a sin to not invest in saving those 10 million lives that can be saved in the next 10 years in sub-Saharan Africa. The citizens of the world, if for no other reason than saving those 10 million lives, should be mobilizing and demanding that of the governments of the world. Global warming is another reason that the citizens of the world should be looking seriously at something like this. There's a proposal out there, I brought a few copies of it along, a group in Massachusetts, Boston, of scientists at Harvard and Tufts, many of them working on global climate change, a number of them working on the health effects of climate change on human population, are projecting that for $200 billion annually, we would be able to put into effect the alternative structures to turn around global warming. And that would be safe and renewable energy, to actually invest around the world in shifting and converting energy in those countries. So we have the potential on two of the major crises in the world, the current AIDS crisis and the global warming crisis, to put some money in at a point in time when they can make an incredible difference. Now, what is going to create the grassroots movement that will do that? I think it's going to be human will, and it's going to be the question of grappling with these very difficult issues. I do encourage you to read the material and to struggle with. This is not a 30-second soundbite issue. If we can understand the global economy, if we can develop a grassroots movement, we can shift the nature of the global economy in such a way that we can invest in the short run in those mechanisms and put into place those mechanisms that will lead to the transformations that many of us are working on. But we do need to look at the humanitarian and the environmental issues that we're facing in the next 10 to 15 years and to deal on a practical, on the real plane with putting money now into those issues to make a change. And those issues are global warming, social poverty in the world, and the AIDS crisis. So I encourage people to grapple with the material for that reason alone. The revenue aspect of this is not a regressive tax. This is not a tax on common everyday people. This is a tax on the wealthiest people in the world, the ones who are speculating daily. This is a tax the rich, feed the poor model. If someone asks you what the Tobin tax is, the 30-second version is, it's a tax on currency exchange in the global arena. It's a tax adopted by nations of the world, a very small tax that will tame speculation, restore national sovereignty, and create enough revenue to meet human and environmental needs.
That was Ruth Ann Cecil, recorded at a conference for sustainable futures in August of 1999 in Los Gatos, California. Ruth Ann Cecil is the Program Director for Financing and Sustainable Development at the Center for Environmental and Economic Development in Arcata, California. I called her to ask for an update, since in the intervening time so many very interesting and encouraging developments had taken place. You may want to get a pen and pencil ready for more information at the end of this program. Here's Ruth Ann Cecil by phone from Arcata in January of 2001.
In the last year or year and a half, as the movement has been growing worldwide, we have come to agreement among a lot of citizen groups that we should be using the plural version of the nomenclature. So rather than just saying Tobin tax, we're explaining it as Tobin-style taxes or Tobin taxes. Sometimes they're called currency transaction taxes. The reason this is important is that we're really asking that these be passed on a national basis by the Congresses and parliaments of the world. So this isn't an attempt to create any kind of one-world taxing authority or anything like that. It's felt that it could be done with multilateral cooperation, similar to what's being discussed with things like tax havens and money laundering and so forth, and international cooperation in those areas.
That requires that a grassroots movement emerge in each of these countries.
Yes, and it's been growing in remarkably fast in Europe and also in most of the developing world and in North America, both in the U.S. and Canada. So this year has been a real year of growth for us worldwide. There were summits all last summer, a number of statements that came out with platforms. There was the first interparliamentarian meeting in Brussels. There were hundreds of NGOs campaigning for Tobin taxes in Geneva at the United Nations Summit on Social Development. There's a sign-on list for economists, which is now on the web and has hundreds of economists who've signed on. We're seeing studies in Africa by NGO groups there. We're, right this week, in January of 2001, there's a conference in Brazil called the World Social Forum, a very large conference of organizations, and Tobin taxes is one of the major themes that will be discussed there, along with basically the whole need to redesign the international economy to make it more equitable and more stable. So it's been an exciting development. In the U.S., we've seen last April the introduction of a House and Senate resolution, Congressman DeFazio on the House side and Senator Wellstone on the Senate side, and we expect that to be reintroduced again this year. That was coming exactly 1 year after the Canadians passed a measure. So the Canadian Parliament was the first in the world to actually adopt a measure. We've also garnered the support this year of the AFL-CIO and the active involvement of the steelworkers through the Alliance for Sustainable Jobs and the Environment, and a number of other groups have been signing on. Also, like to say, this has been a year where we've seen a serious look at currency transaction taxes by both governments and parliaments. Last January, just a year ago, the European Parliament, there was a measure to move along further with consideration of currency transaction taxes. That got 200 votes. It was only 6 short of passage. It was also looked at in the House of Commons in the United Kingdom. They are still considering it, and there's quite a growth of support for that within the Labour Party. You know, it's definitely being taken seriously. It's been taken seriously by economists for years. There's dozens of economic studies that have been published in professional journals and so forth. And now as we see the citizen movements growing, we're seeing the governments begin to take a more serious look at it as well. So it's very encouraging.
That was an update on the Tobin taxes from Ruth Ann Cecil from the Arcata-based Center for Environmental and Economic Development. Here are a couple of websites where you can find more information. Ruth Ann Cecil's organization in Arcata can be found under www.ceedweb.org/IIRP. That's ceedweb.org/IIRP. There you can find a copy of the U.S. Congress Concurrent Resolution. It was introduced by Congressman Peter DeFazio and Senator Paul Wellstone on April 11, 2000. It is extremely well written and, as it stands, a mini-history of the problems and solutions. The International Movement ATTAC, which stands for Association for the Taxation of Transactions for the Aid of Citizens, can be found at www.attac.org. That's ATTAC.org. A search for Tobin taxes will also take you to some of these sites. If all this was too much to remember or write down, go to TUC Radio's website at www.tucradio.org and look for the links under newest programs. You heard a program on the Tobin tax and the emerging worldwide movement to control speculation. You can get a copy of this program that includes a detailed description of how currency speculation works for $12. Your tape order is welcome because it supports our work. For a credit card order, call toll-free anytime at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or send your $12 check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gilarden. Thank you for listening.